Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are just trying to figure it out as they make their way through comedy and life, reporting on their wins, their losses, their draws, their strategic retreats, their full frontal assaults, and their peace treaties. That's what we do here. We break it all down.
You can tell how dialed in this podcast is because like 35 weeks in, and typically on a podcast you get like a four-word intro byline that is very precise, concise of what the podcast is, and with us, never gonna get it, baby.
No,
it's not gonna give it to you.
No, why would consistency be something that you would strive for in any medium, really? You know, just keeping everybody on their toes, myself included.
Yes.
And honestly, Dwight, if you want to take some of these intros, that would be great. This is like 35 episodes of me trying to come up with some shit at the top. So,
nope, this is much better on my end. This is better for my mental sanity.
Okay, all right.
We have made it another week. I've made it another week where I have not force-fed the internet a forced crowd work clip. So,
congratulations.
Yes, we made it another week.
Comedians Anonymous. You know, it's been.
What was funny?
15 days since my last crowd work clip.
I was at the beginning of like everybody posting crowd work clips. I was like, do you play it? Because in my mind, I was like, this is going to take a sharp downturn, and it's only grown exponentially. Wild.
Yeah. It is wild, and it seems to be the prevailing trend, at least for the time going. I tell you when it's going to take a sharp downturn is when I start doing it. And then, you know, like, that's when you'll know that the trend is officially over, was when I finally get around to doing it. So,
yeah, I'm late to everything. I was late to MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Facebook. As soon as I, like, are you on Threads? Are you doing the Threads thing?
I've not done a Threads yet. It's Instagram's version of Twitter, right?
Yes. Or yeah. Instagram's version of X.
X, yeah.
The social media app formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, I hop on there. I was like, this is the same thing, but not as curated, I guess. I don't know. I haven't used it that much.
You know, when everyone was talking about leaving Twitter when Elon Musk bought it and was, you know, and just starting to fuck around with it and you know, like basically unblocking a bunch of fascists and Nazis and shit like that, and everybody's like, all right, we're out, and they, all these people were rushing to fill the void, right? You know, there were like a million, you know, I think there's one called Blue Sky, and you know, a Mastodon and all kinds of stuff like that, and I got on one of them, and it was kind of cool in the fact that the algorithm wasn't shaping it really was just like the latest post of whatever in real time, which is kind of how it used to be on all the other social media platforms back in the day.
Yeah.
So that was kind of refreshing, but it's also just like very quickly it became apparent, like, oh, there's not enough people coming to these platforms to make them viable.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I know that Instagram had that huge when it launched, it was crushing, but when it launched Threads, it was crushing it because it was really at a perfect zenith of anti-Elon Musk sentiment, you know?
And they made it easy. They made it easy, just like, if you have an Instagram account, then we'll just follow everybody that you follow, and then they can do the same. So you weren't starting from scratch, which as a comic was like, all right, I don't have to start from zero on yet another platform. So that was intriguing.
That fan base. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I did have someone, my wife Denise ran into some people from, you know, acquaintances, old work acquaintances or whatever, and she was catching up with them. And apparently their comment was that they haven't seen me posting that much lately.
Yeah.
Because I guess they had been seeing all my reels and stuff that I was cranking out there. And I was like, yeah, just, did you tell them that it just hurts my soul? You know, like, but the reason I stopped doing it is like, it's just, and I'm, you know, I know we're jumping right into the comedy talk, but really, like, there have been a lot of back and forth. You know, I've recently seen, you know, people that we know who've started years after us in comedy and who are like kind of leapfrogging us a little bit because they are getting 100,000 followers on Instagram or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not that they're not capable comics, they're capable, but they seem like they're getting pushed up a lot faster because, again, it's what everyone is looking for now. I just submitted to a club. It doesn't seem like it's really much of a club, but it seems like it's a comedy night somewhere in a bar that's calling itself a club, right? But they had like an official sort of form that you had to go through to submit for consideration, and they wanted all your social media links.
Yep.
So they could go check and see how many followers you got, you know, to come and do their fucking bar and grill show.
Oh man, that's usually my safe haven. If that gets taken away from me, I'll have nothing left.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Anyway, yeah, I was just on, I was scrolling right before we jumped on this, so it was freshly on my mind. I saw like 12 in a row. And it's
Of the crowd work clips, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't watch them, but like, you know, it auto plays the intro, which is like, what do you do, man? I was like, okay, it's like, how do we get there though? All 12 of you? Yeah.
I'm gonna play with the form. Like my crowd work is gonna be like, so what's your deepest fear?
Yeah. That's how you get to like an hour and 45 minute set.
Sure.
Those
sets. Get into it.
Conversations.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Like, so have you experienced any loss in your life?
What's your relationship with your mother like?
Yes, exactly. We'll just get into it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, how was your Labor Day, man?
It was good. So we actually got to see each other in the flesh on Thursday because went ahead and came up to Bloomington to catch the finals of the contest, and you were closing it out. Mm-hmm. And big ups to Joey Cerrone for winning the comedy competition this year.
Yeah,
he had a hot set. It was a tough show, man. Everybody did really well. But Joey edged him out, you know.
He did. I love being on that contest now that I'm not competing, you know, but like watching how insanely nervous all the comics are because they want to destroy in front of this sold out crowd. And I think they all know that it doesn't mean anything, but they still want it real bad. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I thought everyone just brought their A game like to the max. I saw some people with stronger sets than I had seen before. Some people with new stuff, which was cool to see. So overall, great competition. And I actually felt more like connected with the Bloomington scene than I did when I watched the Helium contest.
Now, is that because you were on the show with him, do you think? Because you weren't being a judge for one thing.
Yeah, I mean, I probably just because I saw more of the indie contest and I was like, I don't know who any of these motherfuckers are. And then I know, like, you know, a lot of the people in the Bloomington contest I've known for a long time, or they volunteered at Limestone. So I've gotten to know them that way. So I was like, I actually know these people and I will feel bad because not all of them can win after strong sets. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that everyone felt good about it, you know, like I don't think there were any hurt feelings. It was a great group, and it could have been anybody's. I do want to give a special mention too. I really loved Muhammad Sahir's set in the finals because Muhammad is different than what you normally see in the Bloomington comedy scene, and the fact that he does more long form kind of stories almost.
He's black,
and like also that he's black. Yes, that's also the thing that's different about him in Bloomington. But he does like more of a long form story. Like his entire final set, his entire 10 minutes or so, whatever it was basically one story. It was kind of juxtaposition, going to a funeral and going to a wedding. And also like there was a third event kind of a thing, but it's all tied together under this one umbrella of a story. And I just thought that, and it was all pretty much brand new. I've been gone for the last couple of months, so I don't know if he's been working this or whatever, but somebody said that he hadn't done any of that material in the contest this summer. But so if he had been working it, he was doing it elsewhere and saving it. But I like his style. I think it's good for the mix. You know, it's a hard thing to kind of bring into a contest because if you're dedicating all 10 minutes to one thing, even with like he's a good enough comic, he knows there's like laugh lines. He doesn't wait till the end for the big laugh. He's getting laughs throughout it. That's different than shotgun approach of like a bunch of different topics, a bunch of different, you know, things. And so, just like, I dig it. And I feel like he should get special mention.
I think that's important for other comics to see. Like, mm-hmm. it kind of raises his profile a little bit. He hosted for me when I was down with Aaron Jackson, and I had not seen any of those, any of the tags or anything, like maybe a hint at the premise, but not all 10 minutes, which I thought was really impressive because it crushed.
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago that you saw him with Aaron Jackson when you guys were all on that show together.
Yeah.
does remind me of your bit about black comic comedy show.
even
the best clubs will do that sometimes.
Call that the old Jarrett Thompson.
But no, it is great, and congratulations to Joey and to everybody. And I was talking to some of the people, and a couple of them were actually more nervous, I guess, in the semifinals, because as long as they made it to the finals, they felt like they maybe accomplished what they were setting out to do. So
yeah.
And to everyone who didn't make it to the finals, you should probably just quit comedy, really. I mean,
that is great advice for anybody in general, honestly. Unless you stop coming for my bar, tavern, and grill nights.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Look, just, you don't even need to be doing contests. You just need to grow that social media following. And then you can just take all of the work from Dwight and I. That's what you can do. All right.
Yep. I'm making fun of people like trying to grow their audiences by any means necessary as I chop up 12 minute bits into easy digestible reels that don't fully make sense.
Man, I did see a reel yesterday maybe, and it's from a comic I really like, but it was clearly that's what they had done. Because I was like, oh, this isn't that good. Like what they just posted up there was just, and they're a big enough comic that I think they're just paying someone to do it. You know, there are usually like comics who do it as a side hustle. Well, they'll edit, put the, you know, the titles on and chop it everything up. And it feels like they just gave them like, here's a headlining set at Cobb's, you know, in San Francisco or whatever.
Right.
Get as many clips out of it as you can, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems like, because you know, it's the same thing. Like, I don't know if you've ever ran into this with any of your album recordings or anything like this, but I've definitely had that thing where I've seen like an edit has been brought back to me, and I'm like, well, you chopped off the end of the joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that is actually the point of the joke. Like, it's like, I understand that the ending maybe didn't get as big a pop as the punchline right before the ending, but the ending is the entire reason that we took that journey, you know.
Yeah, it's true, man. Like, it sucks because, like, Facebook will let you post like a 4 minute video, but it's not going to show it to anybody.
No.
And Instagram won't even let you post anything over 90 seconds. And on TikTok, you can post up to 10 minutes, which had some success on there. But it's like, if it's not 90 seconds, then it's a wrap for it pushing it out to people. So, it's frustrating because I'm trying to edit up some clips from the special, and I was like, I don't know if I want to, you know, part one, part two, part eight, part nine, this, like my little mini series.
I've seen those too. I've seen those too. I got to say it works though.
Yeah.
Because I did watch a thing where, and it was just not someone I follow. I was just pushed into my TikTok feed of a comic, and it was like, all right. And I was like, okay, and it was like part three. So then I had to go to the channel to watch the rest of it.
Got you.
Because it did get me. So I watched the whole thing. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe having the serialized clips.
Yeah.
You could binge watch this entire joke
on YouTube without having to click multiple things. Well, no, I like the clicking around.
Yeah. I like the clicking, you know, but yeah, so we did get to see each other. There was also a great moment when you were, and you had a hot one. I get to see finally a lot of these jokes we've been talking about on the podcast. Get to see them live, like the story about your mom stabbing your dad. and like, which we talked about a few times on the podcast about how you were having a hard time making that funny.
I don't know why. I don't know why that subject in general was tough for me to present to an audience.
But I thought it was great, and then you kind of closed out and did some hits. You also asked the sold out room, is anyone else in a interracial relationship, and I was the only one who clapped.
From like the furthest back in the room.
Of course,
I
was. Yeah, exactly. Like the far corner where the comics sit.
It wasn't like an all white room. It was like, that's the funny
chances.
Part.
There was a few chances in there that, you know, could be, you know.
They were like, no, man. No, not at all. How dare you even ask? I also, so I guess it had been a minute since I got check dropped. Mm-hmm. And so I think when that was happening, it was why I just kind of like did a question to the audience to kind of check in and to see if I can get a viral crowd work clip out of it. But then what's funny is that the, so when I recorded at the attic, we timed it so there wouldn't be a check drop because it does.
My recording is special.
Like it does take the attention away from several people in the room. So if you're trying to like build momentum, it's a bad time to do that. That's why like a lot of people will do like their merch drop and stuff like that. But I think I added in an older bit that you called a hit. I can't even remember what it was, but it was not what I had originally planned.
So you did the dream, the Martin Luther King's dream. So you had that, which was a closer to a previous set. That was your closer for a long time, or was the big chunk for any while. And then you had the Good Bones closer as well.
Yeah.
And so you did two big closers, and I think it was around the check drop time, and that was just a strategic move to try to get him back, like go into muscle memory.
Yeah.
And hit him with some things. Yeah.
I'm trying to rework on some stuff for this Kurt Vonnegut gala that I got asked to do. They want like a lot of stuff about like education and stuff that I already talk about. So trying to figure out the best way to put together that 30 minutes, but I also want to drop in some new ideas and thoughts. But I think I got sidetracked, lost a couple tags, but that show is always so fun. Like you're not like I'm never going to leave and being like, oh, I fucked up that set. Because it's like, as soon as you start speaking, you're like, hey, my name's Dwight. And they're like, that's the funniest shit I've ever heard in my life.
I think part of it is too,
this like, boy's going places.
Yeah. You know, they're done voting. It's like the pressure's off. If they're there to see somebody, they know that you're not there to prevent their somebody from getting the prize. So nothing but good. But so that was the kickoff of my Labor Day weekend. And then I went to a wedding on Saturday. My buddy Kit got married up in Anderson, Indiana. And so Denise and I went to that, got to see some old friends. And then Monday, my mother-in-law had a cookout and had some cake and stuff for my birthday, which was a week or so ago. Yeah, and so we just kind of chilled in the pool and ate a bunch, and then I came back down to Jeff that night. So it was pretty laid back, pretty, I don't know, going to a wedding, I guess, is kind of eventful.
I was like, a wedding never sounds laid back to me.
Well, and you know, you get older, you get better at it too. So Denise and I just wore our comfy clothes in the car, drove to a Wendy's right outside of Anderson and changed into our wedding clothes in the bathroom of a Wendy's. Usually when we do that move, it'd be at a Planet Fitness gym, you know, because I have the black membership, so I can get us both in, black card membership. And so we'll go in there. It's a locker room and a spacious, but the Planet Fitness was on the wrong side of Anderson, Indiana. So we were just like, well, we'll just eat it real quick at this Wendy's. And then
you walked in in pajama bottoms and walked out in a three-piece suit.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, I love it. I'm not opposed to this at all.
Yeah.
This
why,
is
you know,
incredible.
Why you get yourself all wrinkly, you know, in the car, driving long distance in your nice clothes. They're uncomfortable, you know, just basic things. So, like, there's a little life hack, I guess, for anybody.
That is the most road comic life hack, just because I've done the fast food restaurant change, just never for something formal.
Yeah.
But I can imagine how exhilarating that is. Like, how cautious are you walking around a bathroom in your socks?
That's the thing is, like, this, I was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to use this place, because apparently the women's room is fine, but the men's room, I don't even think they mopped. I think they just threw a bucket of water on the floor.
Oh, God.
So I had to like stand on the top of my shoes.
Oh no!
And balance and everything. I pulled it off. It was good. And I had to like pull up, like, I had to bunch up the pants legs. So as I was putting my legs through them, they weren't possibly touching the floor.
Oh my God, dude.
And then literally, because I then just scooted out on my shoes until I got out of the bathroom. And then I picked up, which the floor out in the restaurant part was dry. So then I just picked my shoes up and then walked to a booth.
Yeah.
And put my shoes on from there. So, oh my
God, that is incredible. It's like a homeless person trying to get ready for a job interview.
Exactly. Like, yep.
But this is, I hope your friend listens to this and knows and realizes how much you love and care about him.
I doubt that she does listen to this podcast. She's pretty busy, but yeah, I think she knows. I think she, and also would not be surprised, because we used to tour together back in the day with doing music. So she's familiar with these kinds of shenanigans and things that you need to do. So
love it. Yeah. That's all time right there.
What about you? What was your Labor Day like? What'd you do?
We hosted family for our annual family fantasy football league. It's that time of year, baby. I know, Matt, you're really into the fantasy football and sports talk in general. I know it's one of your favorite things.
That's what my other three podcasts are about.
Oh, you're doing well then. So we hosted on Friday night, and I did a shrimp boil on the grill. Nice. So some shrimp and some andouille sausage, potatoes, and some sweet Indiana corn. And then, and then we just kind of hung out all weekend. Everybody has kids except for us, so we kind of like just bounce around on the kids' schedule. You know what I mean? And so we had a little pool time. We ate a lot of food and just caught up with the family. But it was another comedy-free weekend outside of Thursday, which I'm fine with on a holiday weekend. I don't. I've come to the point where it's just like, this is great family time instead of like, I don't know if it's goodwill built up, but it just sucks when the whole family gets together and you got to go do a $75 spot that just like breaks up the night.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also the thing too, of like, comedy shows on holiday weekends are such a mixed bag. They're typically going to be not great, particularly a summer holiday.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants to be outside grilling. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be at the lake. Everybody, you know, the last thing you want to do is sit in a dark room and listen to somebody make jokes about their problems, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I will generally, when I'm in, you know, I'm still motivated from the 10-day challenge, which I made into a 14-day challenge. I'm still like kind of sending some stuff out. I'm still kind of like feeling that energy. I try to get avails, but as I'm looking at calendar stuff, I'm just skipping. Like, I'm not saying I'm available for the July weekend. Those aren't going to be good shows.
No. Yeah.
And so I'm just like, yeah, I'm not putting that in the list of the ones that I'm available for, you know?
Yeah. Especially like we talked about this last week. It's the last few good weeks of summer. So it's like ticket sales are going to be down unless it's something. This is why all these comedy clubs do summer competitions, is to drive crowds inside when it's so beautiful outside. Because that's what I say from July through August, any show. If I wasn't getting paid to be here, I would not be inside right now.
You also would not be here.
I would not be here. So I don't blame you guys. But then, like, you know, this is also something with comedy. It's like, no matter what season it is, there's always an excuse.
Of course. Yeah. But that's the one we're going to use right now. You know?
Yeah.
And then it's going to be cold. Like, oh, the local sports team is playing.
Yep. That's my favorite. Yeah. Can't compete against the Washington Wizards.
Yep. So what do you have coming up? So you got a pretty comedy free weekend. What do you you got anything new coming up?
We are back at it, baby. It's been pretty slow by design. But next week I have three shows in Louisville, one Friday and two Saturday. Those are all Don't Tells. The locations are on my website, dwightsimmons.com. And then I do want to plug this. It's a couple weeks away on September 29th. I'll be doing that Kurt Vonnegut Night of Vonnegut gala at the Madam Walker Theater. I think some tickets are still available. I think they just opened up general tickets, but very excited about that. So if you're in Indianapolis, check it out. Also on my website, dwightsimmons.com. What about you, Matt?
Well, I just want to say before we move on from your stuff, I want to, you know, that Kurt Vonnegut thing sounds super cool. And if you need to, you know, those Wendy's bathrooms will work for you to get dressed for it. If you need to.
There's a pretty dicey one next to it, so I can relive your experience.
Yeah. Well, I do also want to look at the thing here. Like, okay, so yeah, so it's interesting. Like, I don't know if people are just changing the parameters of Don't Tell, because I did go to your website when you said this. So yeah, you can't see where the Don't Tell show is, which is kind of not what Don't Tells were designed as, right? They were originally designed as, you didn't know until the day of where the show was going to be. You didn't know who was going to be on it as far as a general thing. And I did just see a friend of ours in Ohio post, like, come out to Don't Tell, Sean Patton's on it.
It's God.
It's like, that's the exact opposite of the way this is supposed to work. Like, in fact, Sean Patton's management probably doesn't want people to know that he's doing another show in the same city.
Exactly.
As his club booking, you know, that's sort of the whole thing. But I don't know. Maybe they just don't give a shit anymore. The brand is just so strong that, you know.
Well, for me personally, I think I can get people to come to those without like announcing it on social media and just.
Your website
pushes it out to my email list by location.
Gotcha.
So if they can like game plan it, which, you know, that doesn't really ruin the Don't Tell model of, let's collect a trillion emails in an area and then sell out these shows.
Right.
But and someone like Sean Patton would be not ideal though.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is, you know, for people that don't know, the Don't Tells, you know, that's their whole, that's wildly successful model is you never know who's you're going to see. Mm-hmm. And in big cities, there's often very famous comedians. And, you know, this has been around a long time. Like the 12 a.m. show in Atlanta was doing this for years before Don't Tell got launched.
Right.
And because it was a midnight show is after when regular club shows were over, not every single time that they did it, but a lot of the times when you went there, it's like, holy shit, there's Hannibal, you know, dropping in, you know, so you're getting like these big city experiences in not major markets, like, you know, New York and LA, where all the comics live anyway. So it's, you see them all the time do drop ins.
Right.
So, yeah, but that, and then also the, like, you know, what kind of wacky location is it going to be in?
Yep.
But maybe it's just become such a juggernaut that they're like, they're just like, who cares? I don't know. Yeah, I hope you don't get in trouble with the Don't Tell police. That's all I'm saying. You know, the secret Don't Tell police.
Yeah, I don't know. I've tried to get booked through their website. Mm-hmm. That was, I think when we were doing the challenge, that was the second time I like filled out the forms in the cities mm-hmm. and hadn't heard back yet. But I've gotten every Don't Tell I've gotten has just been a producer reaching out. I don't know how often people get booked off that website. Because they do have a website you can go to and fill it out and submit a clip and put your avails. It's very well put together. I just don't know how often that's happening.
I'm going to say, as someone who produces the ones in Bloomington, I would say almost never. Like, mm-hmm. I see it because if they select, you know, you can see they've selected like Bloomington, Indy, Louisville, Columbus, all these like Midwest cities, mm-hmm. you know. But the thing is, like, for mine, anyway, for the Bloomington ones, at most we do once a month.
Right.
And I already know all these comics that I'm wanting to bring in, and so it's just very hard for me to justify someone just off of a clip when I guess if you're cranking them out and you're doing like three a week, you know, like they are in Columbus, then you might have a chance because they're just burning through comedians, they need people.
But I
the same thing, like I've just been reaching out directly to the producers, that, you know, because you find out pretty quickly who's the producer
in each market,
and then you just kind of go that route. So but yeah, man, that's cool, it's exciting. It's funny you're going to be down here though, because once again we're going to miss each other, because I will be back in Bloomington this weekend. Very last minute got added. There was a cancellation, so the Attic is doing a Shanda and Friends weekend. And so Shanda asked me to be her friend. Nice. And I was like, does it pay? And she's like, yes, my friendship pays. And so I'll be at the Comedy Attic this Friday and Saturday, the 8th and the 9th. Those tickets are on sale right now on my website. There's a link there. Or you can also just go through the Comedy Attic's website. And then the following long weekend. I am up in Minneapolis headlining Comedy Corner Underground the 15th and 16th, and would really like to pack those out if we can. I'm going to talk to you off mic a little bit about doing social media ads, since you have more experience with that than I do, because I might have to sink some money into that, just try to get some people out for those. But that's what I got going on. And then you can see the success that I had from the 14-day challenge on my website, which is MadelonaMartinComedy.com. Every one of those words has a hyphen in between it, except for comedy and com, which there is a dot. So that is MadelonaMartinComedy.com. Do I regret naming my website that? Yes, I do. You can also just Google my name. You can just Google my name in comedy, and it should be the very first thing that you see.
Just yell it into Google or Siri or Alexa, and hopefully she can help you out.
Yeah, or just outside to the sky, go out to the sky and yell it up, you know.
Where is Matt?
We do have a question of the week this week. Should we jump into it?
Yeah.
All right. This week's question comes from my old friend Tina, aka Lady T. Her email says, "Hello, gentlemen." Well, that's an assumption. It's very kind of you, but not always accurate. Okay. Hello, gentlemen. My better half and I were up in Portland, Maine a couple of weekends ago, and we got a 1-2 punch of references to Dwight's special. First, we were in Maine. Then we saw this on the walk to lunch, and I should have forwarded this to you, but she attached a photo, and it's a photo of two men and a truck.
Nice.
I had to take a picture and share it with you all. So those are obviously not the questions. Those are just her proving that she watched your special, I guess.
I appreciate it. That's those are deep into the special. So that is proof of life that I accept.
Yeah, there you go. And then this is also a good chance for you to go, "See, I can't make this up. You know, this is real life."
I wish I was this good of a writer.
Man, I always whenever a comedian says that, I always hear Jackie Cation's voice, because Jackie has commented on that before. It's like, well, it's like whenever a comedian says, "I couldn't make this up," and she's like, "Well, you're bad at your job then." Like, most of what we do is make things up. All right, here comes the question. She says, "Thanks again for the podcast. Really enjoying it." Thank you, Tina, for listening. Appreciate that. Fan question, if you need one. God knows we always need questions, so thank you. Mm-hmm. The question is there anyone you haven't toured with / worked with that is on your bucket list? Doesn't have to be a big name necessarily, just someone you really admire. Thanks again for keeping me company as I work from home. Cheers, T. What about you? You got anybody that's on your bucket list, somebody you'd like to work with?
This sparked a comedy core memory that I have of when I was about to have my first big feature weekend at the Attic for Arsenio Hall. I got the call from Jared. I lost my mind and I was like, "Are you serious? I get to feature for Arsenio Hall. Like, this is the guy that," like, I told my parents about it, because my dad watched the Arsenio Hall show, and like, one of my favorite movies is Arsenio, or one of my favorite characters is Arsenio Hall in Harlem Nights, just nerdy gangster. And then, of course, Coming to America, where he plays several characters. I was just over the moon. And then I got the call that Arsenio did not want a black male opener.
Man.
And I was devastated, because what the fuck? I didn't know that was a thing that people
it was some headliners definitely say that, but it was a surprise that it was
Arsenio. Yeah, exactly. I was without even like watching tape or anything. I guess he had a bad experience once with a black man opener, and he said never again, which baffled me that he would be like that quick about it, he wouldn't just take it out on the actual comic, but all comics, # not all black men, hump the stool. So that question triggered that for me. So I was like, I don't give a fuck who I work with. But I would love to work with Roy Wood Jr. I think he's one of my favorite comics I've seen in the last decade. I absolutely look up to him, the way he writes. He's so funny. And I've met her, but I've never worked with Maria Bamford. I think that would be really cool because I think she has one of the best audience bases left in stand-up comedy. So those would be the first two that come to mind. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Mark comedy audiences. And I feel like Roy's would be like that too. So maybe I just want to work with people that have decent human beings as their core audience.
I think that's a good quality to look for sure. Man, I think those are great. I've opened for Maria a couple times, but it's always been festival related. It was I opened for a couple times at Cloudtop Comedy Festival, and then there was another festival we were on where I got to open for her. And she is great and her fans are amazing. So I'm lucky that I've gotten to do that. Man, I you and I have talked, you know, not that long ago about how I really think Roy Wood Jr. is just maybe the best comic working today. His last couple specials have just been so unbelievably good. And he seems to be avoiding some of the traps that other famous comedians of a certain age have fallen into, you know, of drifting to like the these damn kids, you know, like, you know, kind of like anything new and in society that I didn't grow up with is bad, you know. It's not
right.
He's not turning into that yet. Knock on wood. Knock on Roy Wood Jr.
I do think that's like he talks about that and how he has always had that mindset. If everybody's talking about this, especially his contemporaries, to go the opposite way or just not even talk about it because it's like it's to him it's a dead subject. So why not?
Yeah.
Spend your energy doing something else.
So your theory is he is a terrible human being. He's just not talking about it on stage.
We'll never know because I've never worked with him. So
one day you'll get to find out.
Yeah.
I will say there is this thing too of like, I am hesitant to like, I feel pretty safe with Roy because Roy did come and do Limestone. I've been around Roy and he seems like a very, very decent human being. You know, and so I doubt, you know, all joking aside, I doubt that he's secretly harboring anything horrific. But I am hesitant to say because I specifically, when I saw Harlan Williams was headlining a club, I reached out to that club, which I've worked for over the years. And I was like, can I feature for Harlan? Because I've always been very interested in him. I think he's an interesting guy. I don't know if you ever saw his one stand-up special where it's him alone in the desert and he's just yelling his jokes to the sky.
No.
It's like crazy, like stuff like that. But it was like, and you know, I don't want to, he was perfectly nice enough.
Yeah.
But he had a couple of jokes. I'm like, I don't know about, like how I feel about this. But, you know, and again, it was like, oh, they're just jokes. And it's like, there's still like a sort of a mean spiritedness to some of the things that he was talking about that I wasn't crazy about. So, I'm don't really have somebody that I want to go through that again with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You have the don't meet your heroes syndrome. Not that he was your hero, but like you don't want to be let down, sort of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you know, I'm now looking online of lists of comedians too, because we know so many, you know, I've been very lucky to work with a lot of people that I, you know, I've opened for Maren, who I think is a great comedian.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to work with, you know, Stuart Huff early on in my career. I would like to do more shows with Stuart. He's don't get to work together very often.
He's special, man.
Yeah, he is special. Particularly I'd love to work with him, you know, in one of the couple of markets where he brings out his own crowd that kind of gets it.
Yeah.
You know, because he'll play anywhere and he'll do well in any room, but you know, people that are kind of more interested in like a more thoughtful intellectual approach to comedy. Not that I'm particularly doing that, but you know, like when I drift slightly into that area, they don't like recoil in horror, you know.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, can we take a minute to have like a little bit of a seriousness to this joke? Is that no? Okay. All right. Okay, good. All right.
Shout out to Lowell, Arkansas. I like when I think of people like it's a tough question because we've been doing it so long, so I feel like we have so many preconceived notions of what working with someone would be like. If I said Sarah Silverman, it would probably be go up and do 15 minutes and then a two-person show. And then, and I think I would like to work more as a feature or like a contemporary model rather than like opening up for like a theater name. I feel like when you open for Marin, he probably had you do more of a feature set. And then I don't think he's like a hang guy, but I still like the hang after shows a little bit. So that also plays into it.
Yeah, I almost said Sarah Silverman as well too. But I'm also, it's one of those things like, I don't think that she, you know, have any jokes that I found to be, you know, offensive or problematic, because she's definitely someone I think that has done the work to also like, oh, I did some fucked up shit on my show and maybe, you know, that wasn't, you know, as cool or okay as I thought it was at the time.
Yeah.
But I would just be like, oh, she's gonna think I'm a dork or something. So there's that too, you know.
I can't we cannot live with ourselves if we hear it. Oh, that's funny.
But I so I'm gonna go with Roy Wood Jr. because I feel like it's the right amount of comfortableness. Like, I think he's cool enough, chill, laid back guy, even though he's such a great comic that it would be you know, you're still gonna go out and eat after the show and have a good time, you know.
Yeah, I dig it. I dig it. Any, what about anyone younger? I'm trying to think if there's anyone younger that's just like blowing up.
I mean, I'd love for Matt Rife to take me on tour.
Just there he is.
Get those dates. Let me fill up this calendar. No, younger comics. It is one of those things too where, you know, like Emil Joaquin, you know, came up in Bloomington and I took him out on the road a little, you know, like not extensively, but a weekend here or there, like we'll go to the, you know, the Laughing Tap together. Or I'll go do things like this when he was coming up and starting a feature. And I would be great now for him to take me. Not saying that he owes me, but I'm just seriously, he is much younger than me, but he's one of those guys that we just immediately kind of bonded and got along and we would just hang out at the coffee shop. And, you know, he's a good hang. He's like a funny, like him and Mitchell Potts. He's younger than Mitchell, but he and Mitchell are two guys that came up in the Bloomington scene that I just immediately were like, oh, these guys are cool to hang out with off, you know, off stage too. As you know, the very wise Brent Terhune has said many times, it's like how you are in the car is more important than how you are on stage. So whether or not he's going to take you on, because like that's most of it is the other 23 hours of the day.
Right.
It's hanging out together. And both Emil and Mitchell were, and are still to this day, super fun to hang out with. And now that Emil is like really blown up, like I'd open up for him.
Yeah,
it'd
man.
Be like when Pauly Shore used to have his dad open for him, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody would be like, "What is this old man doing up here?"
Yeah. Now, would you travel with the person that Emil used to open up for, or maybe he still does open up for, Nikki?
I don't have anything against Nikki. I mean, yeah. You know, she's been perfectly lovely the times that I've been around. You know, like I was around her and knew her tangentially, not like super well.
Yeah.
But I think she knows who I am. If she sees me in Bloomington, she goes like, oh, that's the guy from the attic and from Limestone or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think if she randomly saw me somewhere else, that thing of like the familiar face, but not in the right setting.
Right.
Where you're just like, how do I know that person? I was around her before she got famous, and I've been around her since she's blown up and everything. And she's perfectly nice. Yeah, I think she would be a good hang. She seems to treat her crew really well, you know. She tours with friends, makes it like a fun event for everybody, from what it sounds like. You know, we've known a couple people that have toured with her. And so, yeah, I mean, if she's looking to get out of the young, cute, ethnically ambiguous opener lane and go with the old grizzled white guy opener, I'm available. Give me a call, Nikki. I'll do it.
Her audience be like, are we at the right show? What?
Dude,
Nikki
I will say
changed.
I will say that, again, younger comic who's blown up and is a great comic, Catherine Blanford. I did open for Catherine in Denver, and we were just randomly paired together, and her crowds were very polite to me, but they did not want to hear my bullshit. Like, they were not there for me. Like, she is bringing out a crowd that is like very much like there for her.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of, not to the extent, but it gave me a little bit of flashbacks to when I used to open a lot for like Aaron Foley And then a couple of times for Fortune Themester when they were coming through the Midwest, there was a couple of bookers in the Midwest who were like, he's a great opener because he's not a lesbian. He's not going to step on any of the same topics and jokes, but he's like this very liberal guy. And so it's like, it seems like a good fit, man. Some of those shows were rough, man. Yeah. I remember opening for Aaron at the Grog Shop in Cleveland. I think we did two shows. One of the shows was great. The other show, they just hated me. And like, I get it. It's a room full of lesbians. They have to listen to the straight white male perspective 24/7. That's what our society pumps out, right? And through mainstream channels. They thought they were coming to see this lesbian icon of comedy. And then that's sitting my shit for 30 minutes. So I got it. I totally got it, man. That's, and the same thing happened on a couple of Fortune shows too. Some of them were great, but some of them, they're just like, we do not want to hear this.
You're like the toll booth for the before they get what they really want.
Yes, exactly. So,
That is,
and like, I feel like that happens. I think sometimes whenever you open for like a famous person in general, but it seemed like it was amplified then at that point. And also, I got it. It's like, I totally understand. Why you're kind of not feeling this?
That's when it's like when I opened for Tiffany Haddish. It was I knew I was getting thrown to the wolves. Because, like, we talk about this, like, a lot of people that go to see ultra famous celebrities don't necessarily know what the structure of a comedy show is. They think that the person's just going to walk on stage. And so I get up there and they're like, who? This is not Crenshaw, LA. Like, this is not what we wanted. Get your interracial marriage shit out of here. So I do like 7 minutes, bring up the feature Tiffany put on her Netflix show, Marlo Brown. And Marlo, with no jokes, fucking destroys. She's just like, damn. And they damn near give her a standing ovation. And she does 12 out of her 30 minutes featuring. And then Tiffany comes up and everybody's like dancing in the aisles. It's absolutely raucous. I've never seen anything like it, but they loved her and they had to like hold that energy in through my dumbass. And then they gave Marlo something, and then but that's the other part. It's like, you don't I don't want that life. I don't want that life of opening up for like these very famous people and I'm just gonna get annihilated. You know?
Well, I don't think it's always that way. You know, when I opened for Ralphie, his fans were very on board because he didn't even do the thing where he came out first and like, hey, thanks everybody for being here. And like, I want to bring up this first comic's a friend of mine, you know, which I've had people do that for me before too. Like famous people that I've opened for, particularly in a non-comedy situation, they understand they got to like smooth it over and buy you some of that grace, you know. But his crowds were like on board. They were just like, yes, like we're here. If, like, this person's on tour with Ralphie, then like Ralphie's okay to him, we're okay with him. I know that, you know, Jeff Tate has had that experience opening for Tom Segura. The Segura's fan base have just been from the jump like, yep, cool, if you're the guy that's opening for Tom, then we're on board, you know. So I don't think it's necessarily always a like, just fucking, we don't give a shit about you opening act, like, you know. It depends. It's audience, fan base to fan base, you know.
I agree. Like, your two examples are tried and true stand-up comics who had comedy audiences already, versus not that Tiffany didn't do stand-up, but that's not why she got famous. She was like the most famous, they called her the funniest woman in America, and then she came to the Comedy Attic and sold out four shows. So it is different. And the reason I bring that up is because, like, when people come to see social media people, they typically act more like a movie star's crowd,
right, than
an actual Tom Segura crowd or a Ralphie May crowd.
A joke loving crowd.
So there is a difference.
There is a difference there too. But yeah, thank you for the question, Tina. Hopefully we danced around it long enough to keep you company while you're working from home. But yeah, like, I don't know, maybe I'm going to manifest. I'm going to visualize. I watch a lot of daytime TV nowadays. And so I was watching CBS morning show, and then this woman on who's like the first Black author to ever have a Golden Books. Remember Golden Books?
I do.
Like kids' books. So, and she had written a couple of books under this, created this brand called Black Unicorn. Tiffany Haddish. Yeah. And so they were interviewing her and everything. And she was talking about like the Golden Books thing. She was like, I just manifested it. She was like, I was like, once I started writing, I was like, I'm going to have a Golden Book. And she was really believing in that. So I'm going to manifest me opening for Roy Wood Jr. And I'll get you tickets, Dwight. I'll let you come see the show. You know, we'll put you
I appreciate
list.
That. Yeah. I appreciate that because, you know, I'm not paying to go to a comedy show. If it's a variety show, then maybe.
Okay.
I'm gonna need that free
some
ticket.
Juggling involved, then you'll pay. Okay, good.
Now, is like, what does your manifestation regimen look like? Is it sitting?
I think about apples.
I turn the music down for a couple seconds and just think about it.
I look off into the distance and go, yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. I'm in the Wendy's bathroom. I'm standing on the tippy toes of my shoes. And I'm like, you know what? Is this the life I want? Things could be so different if I just opened up for Roy Wood Jr. every once in a while.
That's what I'm manifesting, that. And I used to try to like really focus, you know, we talk about goal setting on here a lot, you know, like I was really focused on getting a late night set for a long time, and it did occur to me as like, well, if I hate social media so much, maybe I should go back to trying to get on, like trying to like come up with a tight five, tape it, you know, TV clean five, send it off, you know. I was like, maybe that would be a good goal, since I do not want to try and conquer social media again. Like, yeah,
it's tough. I'm gonna keep trying, but I've limited myself to one clip a week.
Because
I don't like, that's it.
I think it's a better way to do it. Yeah,
put mental energy in other things that I actually care about, like writing and my relationship with my wife. And that's been
it. you put that after writing, but that's okay.
I mean, one thing got me the other, I think.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. She was like, you know, he ain't that cute, but he write a good joke. So yeah,
he can write a nice love letter. He's got an English degree.
If you out there in Matt and Dwight land want to send us a question, we would love to hear one from you, or multiple ones. You know, that seems to be the thread too. It's like, thank you, Tina, for keeping it to one question. That's it's rare, but we appreciate that. But if you have a multi-part question or a single quick one, you can email those to us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. We'd love to have your questions about comedy or really anything else. We'll take a stab at whatever, you know?
Yeah, throw it at us. Yeah. We'll do it. Thank you guys for listening. Also, please feel free to rate and review and share the podcast. We had an influx of listeners last week. So hello, everybody. If you're new, just subscribe, and then we will continue to go onward and upward through manifestation, I guess. That's what we're true. Doing
That's...
now.
We're going to make it happen. That's what we're going to do. I thought maybe it'd be a fun thing if we ended, I got to go to the 4x3. I was going to say, would it be fun if we just ended every episode by reading a comment from one of your YouTube videos? And
no, you want the Facebook thread.
Oh, the Facebook thread. All right. Yeah. We'll get that prepped up and ready to go for next week. So we could just like, here's this week's crazy comment.
Yeah, I can do that very quickly. They're always... Okay, yeah,
give us they're ready to go.
Hold on, see how quick that was.
Dun dun dun. The tension is
they're
building.
Just always pop up on my phone, and they're always like the same.
Okay,
here's one we've talked about it from I'm not even gonna blur out people's names because you're posting on a social media platform. Yeah. Jesse Greenwood says, guests don't say masturbate to now. TOONOW. Smiley face tree. And then the emoji with the tongue sticking out. I don't know what that. I don't know. The new woke phrase is ... Well, probably can't even say spank the monkey. Too offensive violence. Smiley face, and then tear laughing face. So, the internet is a healthy place. I don't know why I want to step away from it and spend less time with it. So
exactly. I'm looking forward to how many people use emojis at this Vonnegut conference that you go to. how much crying, laughing face, ghost farting emojis there are at the Vonnegut thing. So, yeah.